As we jump in, one of the things that we mentioned, or I mentioned last week, was that we were going to give you an opportunity to commit to ways that you can go deep. We've been talking about going deep throughout this sermon series since the beginning of January. We talked about going deep in growth, going deep in community, going deep in service, today going deep in prayer. And what we promised last week was that we were going to have a card ready for you to have some information about ways that you could commit. But then that was our expectation. That was what we expected to happen today. But then something unexpected happened this past week. If you were in Valdosta, maybe you saw something different about our landscape that's different than usual. What happened, folks? When I moved here, I didn't think that was possible. But lo and behold, God amazed us. Everything turned white for a couple of days. There's still some white ice out there. And it was an incredible moment to just kind of enjoy a couple of days of schedule being disrupted. Hopefully everybody was safe during the midst of that. But it was something I did not expect. And because of that, we were a little delayed in getting our information printed for this week. We got the bulletins printed at the last minute when the office was able to reopen, but we didn't get those cards printed. But we'll have them next week. Kenji's going to make sure I remember that. But it was just one of those things that threw us off during the week. And so we'll look forward to that next week as an opportunity to reflect on ways that we can all go deep together. And that idea of expectation, of what we expect to happen, and then when something happens that we don't expect, it really plays into this whole idea of prayer that we're going to look at today. Because prayer is ultimately a matter of what you expect to happen. Now, a quick story, something comical that happened to Emma and I about 12 years ago. She was in physical therapy school at the time, and she was living up in New Hampshire one summer. And she spent 8 weeks up there doing a clinical rotation. And during the middle of her time up there, I went and spent a week with her, and we got to explore a little bit in the area. This is a picture of two kids that may or may not be us. I don't know. That was a while ago. And there we are exploring the mountains of New Hampshire. We spent a couple of days before July 4th holiday going and seeing some different things. And there we were exploring waterfalls, walking around and enjoying nature that day. And as we finished up our exploration, we decided we were going to go eat dinner in Vermont. And then we were asked to leave Vermont. I don't know. It was a strange situation. They just kind of turned us away. Seriously, they said, we're full tonight. And there were plenty of tables open. It was very weird. And so we decided we would go back to New Hampshire, where it was a little more hospitable. And we went over to this cute little town called Hanover, New Hampshire. Anybody ever been there before? I mean, great little town. Dartmouth University is there. Super cute. Very preppy. Pristine. Looks like Main Street, USA, straight out of a magazine. And we went, and we just had the most wonderful hospitable time there, had a great dinner. Instead of kicking us out of the restaurant, they put us in a window in the front of the restaurant so people passing by could see how gross we were from walking in the mountains all day. It was awesome. We had a great time. But there was one unexpected encounter that we had that we have laughed about for years since we were there. And it's a little colorful, so bear with me for a minute. But we encountered this guy who was probably in his early 20s, never got his name. We do have a name we remember him by that I'll share with you in a minute. And this guy comes walking up to us, and for some reason, he thought that Emma and I knew where the nightlife was in Hanover, New Hampshire. So he comes up and he says, "Where are the parties at?" I mean, this is like a Tuesday night. I mean, I'm like, we don't know. We're not from here, and that's not really our scene. He's undeterred by this. He goes, "I'm looking for a club, a bar. All I want to get out of tonight is to get so drunk that I wake up in a bathtub somewhere." And we just kind of scratched our heads and kind of sat back for a minute and thought, you know, it's impressive that he has very clear expectations of what he wants to get out of tonight. At least he's clear about what he's hoping and expecting. On the other hand, we felt like his expectations might be a little misguided. And maybe there was something better that he could hope for out of that night and out of life. Anyways, he goes through and we don't give him any information that he can work with. We go and we eat our dinner. He comes and finds us at the restaurant we're at later that night. And he walks in and he tells us with great excitement in his voice that he has found where the action is. The action is not going to be found in Hanover. You will have to drive to Concord. And he invited us to come and join him there. And we declined. But we declined not just for that reason, but also because we were in Concord the day before, and we hated to break it to him, but there was no action in Concord either. He wasn't going to find anything fun there. But we hope that his life turned out well, and we have affectionately remembered him all these years later as Bathtub Boy. And whenever we think about Hanover, New Hampshire, we think about Bathtub Boy and the great joy that he brought to our lives with his very clear expectations, misguided as though they were, but he had a clear expectation of what he hoped to get out of that night. Now, when I think about expectations, hopefully your expectations for life and your hopes and dreams are greater than that expectation and that hope and dream. I trust, looking at the congregation today, that that is true for each and every one of us. But when we think about expectations, we have expectations of what we hope to get out of vacations that we go on. We have expectations for how our life is going to turn out. We have expectations for what our kids and grandkids' lives are going to look like. We have lots of expectations in things in life. But if we're honest with ourselves, a lot of times we don't have a lot of expectations when it comes to our life of faith. We don't always have clarity about what it is that we expect or what we hope to experience as a part of our faith. Think about it for a second. When you get ready for church, what expectations do you have? What hopes do you have for Sunday? Do you come expecting to see people and to maybe sing a few songs or at least listen to Kenji sing them? Do you have expectations maybe to hear something that will inspire you and motivate you? Do you have expectations that God's going to move in a powerful way? Or do you have expectations at all? And when it comes to the matter of prayer, what do you really expect when you pray? Do we pray expecting that God's going to move in response to the words that we're offering up to him? Or do we just offer those words because somehow it soothes us and makes us feel better? What is it that we really truthfully expect God to do when we pray? The passage we looked at this morning and this whole idea of going deep in prayer, I believe is really centered on what is it that we expect? What do we hope and truly believe? What do we trust God to actually do when we engage in prayer and we try to go deeper in prayer? Now, that idea of going deeper in prayer, there are a few different ways that I've taught on prayer over the past few years since I've been here. One angle we can look at with prayer is from the idea of our listening to God, that prayer is an invitation to be more intimate with God and to hear the Lord's voice and to hear him speak. And we do that through the contemplative silence, through taking the time to not always just talk and just spout off things in prayer, but to truly be still and to wait on God and to receive from God. And as we read through the scriptures, we pray those words and we ask God to speak to us through that. Another way we think about going deep in prayer is that prayer is a means of aligning our heart with God's heart. It's not just about listing our requests before God, but it's about us, if we truly go deep in prayer, we are being molded and shaped into the will of God and aligning our heart with the will of heaven that we might see it come to pass. But today, we're not looking necessarily at that particular angle, although those components are a part of it. Today, I want to challenge us as we reflect on this passage to think of the prayers that truly require faith, that truly require expectation and belief, that truly require us to come before God and to muster up just a little bit of faith to truly believe that God can do something miraculous, that God can do something incredible. And the question really at the heart of this, when we think about prayer that requires a bold kind of faith, is what does it take for us to see a miracle take place? What does it take for us to see something incredible and unexpected truly come to pass? What would it take for us to truly pray in a way that is filled with belief? This passage invites us into that question. It's embedded within there that there is a sense of a lack of faith, that the disciples are not able to perform the healing that they've been asked to do. And Jesus has to step in and give them a little bit of a lecture along the way of how they are lacking faith and how they just need a little bit of faith in order to see this kind of miracle take place. And within it, it challenges us to reflect on how we engage with God and what we truly expect. Now, Matthew's gospel is one of three gospels that gives us this story. It shows up in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Matthew and Luke give shorter versions of it. So what we read this morning is probably the most compact of the three different versions of what happened. We get just the basic information. There's a man who has a son who is suffering from seizures. He had brought that son to the disciples of Jesus. They were unable to heal him. So instead, the man turns to Jesus himself and says, "Your disciples weren't able to perform the miracle. Will you please heal my son?" And Jesus, like I said, gives this little lecture on how they had lacked faith, and then he heals the boy. And then we're told that they come to Jesus and they ask why they weren't able to do it. And so that's the basic flow of the story in Matthew. Now Mark, who usually is the short-winded one, usually he's got the quick stories, he just gives you the basic information and then he keeps going. Mark actually in this case gives us more information than the other two gospels. And in Mark's version, we get this incredible dialogue. This is what the man says to Jesus as he's asking him to heal his son. We're told in Mark chapter 9, verses 21, Jesus had asked him, "How long has he been like this?" And the man answers, "From childhood." And then we pick up in verse 22, "It has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." Did you hear that question? If you can do anything. It's almost like a dare to Jesus. If you can do anything, there's not a whole lot of expectation in that. He's just saying, if you can do anything, if it's possible, please take pity on us and help us. Jesus replies, and he's got almost like a little bit of a scoff in this. He says, "If you can," said Jesus, "everything is possible for one who believes." And verse 24 says, "Immediately the boy's father exclaimed, 'I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief.'" Now, I'm going to be honest with you. The prayer that I think I pray more than any other prayer is the words of Mark chapter 9, verse 24. "Lord, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief." When you think about your faith, you probably also think about your doubts. When you think about what you hope to see God do, you probably also have a little bit of trepidation that maybe that prayer won't be answered. And I think it's okay to name that. I think it's okay to vocalize that out loud. Jesus responds and honors the man's request after he expresses his honesty and his doubt and demonstrates that he is someone who does believe, but at the same time, there's a part of him that's holding back, that's characterized by the sense of unbelief. And I believe that if we want to be honest before God, if we want to enter into a place where we can see God do miraculous things through prayer, and we can see God respond in ways we couldn't even possibly imagine, we've got to start by acknowledging our own humanity. We've got to embrace our doubts. And I believe when we embrace our doubts, that doesn't demonstrate a lack of faith. What that does is that demonstrates an honesty of where we are coming before God. Doubt is not an absence of faith. Instead, doubt is like a canvas for God to paint on and to do something that we didn't fully believe was possible. Doubt is the opening for us to engage in a deeper faith. Doubt is the platform for God to do his most incredible work. If we would simply come before God, admit where we are human, admit where we are lacking, and admit where we don't fully see what is possible. We come before God with our doubts, and when we do, we put ourselves in a position to receive because we are acknowledging the limitations that we bring to the table. The first aspect of prayer is just becoming aware of our own humanity and our own inability to do something on our own. And for this man, what he had to bring to the table, the limitation that he had to bring to the table, was simply coming before Jesus and saying, "I believe, I trust, We can see this kind of embedded in what he's saying. I see that you can perform miracles. I see that you're a mighty teacher. I see that there are things that are possible with you. But at the same time, I've struggled for so long with what I've seen with my son that there's a part of me that doesn't believe it's possible. And he brings that honesty and that doubt before Jesus. And it creates a platform for Jesus to perform the miracle. Switching back to Matthew's version, after Jesus kind of chastises the disciples for not having faith, they come to him and they ask, you know, Lord, why weren't we able to do this? What was it that we were lacking? What did we do wrong? They thought it was like a formula of some sort, like we said this word and we did this part, but it didn't happen the way we thought it was going to. Why didn't it happen? This was a bigger challenge than we thought we were going to face. And so Jesus tells them in chapter 17, verse 20 of Matthew, he says, because you have so little faith. Truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. Now, do you see what happened there? Jesus says that the reason it didn't happen is because they had so little faith. You have so little faith. That's why this didn't happen. But then what does he say immediately after that? All you need is small faith. All you need is small faith. So essentially what he told them is you have so little faith, you don't even qualify for small faith. That's not a compliment to the disciples, by the way. And so he tells them, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed. Now, if we go back a few chapters in Matthew's gospel to chapter 13, there's this parable of the mustard seed in which Jesus describes the mustard seed as being the smallest of seeds, but yet it grows to be the mightiest plant in all of the garden. So we know that there's great potential with what God can do through a mustard seed. But here Jesus isn't talking about what it can become and what it could grow into. Jesus is saying, if this is merely your starting point, the smallest of seeds, the smallest amount of faith, that's all I'm asking of you. You have so little faith that you didn't even qualify for that. And he says, but if you have even that small of faith, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. Now, there's a little asterisk there by 21. Verse 21 doesn't show up in all of the translations that we have in English, but if you go back to some of the early manuscripts, there's another verse there that isn't printed in a lot of our Bibles. And that verse simply says, this kind of miracle is only possible through prayer and fasting. The way that God responds, the way that this faith is demonstrated is when you come before God with a believing sense of prayer and a believing sense of faith. And you're willing to surrender yourself, you're willing to fast for it, you're willing to believe for it, and you're willing to trust that it's truly possible through prayer. And embedded within this is the idea that we not only need to embrace our doubts, but we also, this seems contradictory, but it all works together, we need to embrace our faith as well. We need to embrace just a little bit of faith, just a little bit of trust, and through that, we can see God do the miraculous. Now, one story that I've heard over the years, I've heard it a few times, is this incredible story of faith and prayer, of God doing something completely unexpected. When I was in college, I was a part of this ministry called the Wesley Foundation at the University of Georgia, had a wonderful experience there, and during my time there, I got to know a guy by the name of Tom Tanner. Tom Tanner had been the director of the Wesley Foundation back in the 1990s, and he had moved on to another ministry by that point. But he came back for an event that we were doing, and he told some stories about prayer and the impact that prayer had upon the ministry back when he was a part of it in the 90s. The ministry was growing rapidly, and they didn't know what they were going to do. And so they were completely out of space. They were running multiple services, and they said, if God's going to enable us to reach more students, we've got to have more space. But they were a campus ministry in the 1990s. They did not have the money to even think about building anything. And so Tom, who's an ordained clergy person, trained and everything, he's just kind of scratching his head going, I don't know what we're going to do. So the students, what they did, you know, untrained, uneducated at this point, they come to Tom and they said, hey, what if we took some time to pray about it? And Tom's like, that's a great idea. Why didn't I think about that? And so the students, they organized this prayer movement. And for 21 days, they prayed and they fasted and they would gather together every single day and they would pray that God would open up an opportunity for them to be able to reach more students and for them to have more space in order to hold their services. And so they're praying, they're seeking God's provision and direction. And one day during that 21-day prayer and fasting time, the office phone rings at the Wesley Foundation and Tom picks up the phone. And there's a person on the other end who said, hey, I met my wife at a picnic at the Wesley Foundation at the University of Georgia back in the 1940s. I haven't really kept up much over the years, but I hear God's doing some good things there. Is there anything that you need? I'd love to be able to give you a gift of some sort. And Tom, here's the Lord I believe, but help my unbelief. He said, my mind wandered as far as maybe he was going to give $100,000. That was the boldest he got. And he starts kind of rattling off, you know, we're a campus ministry. We have lots of needs. We have, you know, the power bill each month. We have my salary each month. We have programming for students. There's a lot of stuff we need. I don't even know where to begin. And the guy says, you know, dream a little bit bigger than that. Is there something that you need? And Tom said, you know, we've run out of space. We're not going to be able to reach more students unless we have more space to work with. And the man said, what if I gave you $500,000? And Tom says he fell out of his chair. I mean, he was just like, you know, sitting in the office chair, and then it was just no more. And he's on the floor, and he kind of regains his composure and talks to the guy anymore, figures out that he's actually legitimate. And when it was all said and done, he ended up giving almost $1 million that ended up building the chapel that was used for worship when I was a student there in the early 2000s. Now, what's incredible about that story was they didn't pray for a dollar amount. They didn't pray that God was going to send this mysterious man from Florida who had not been on the campus of the University of Georgia in almost 50 years. They just went in believing and trusting that God might do something incredible. And ended up paving the way for hundreds and thousands of students who've been impacted by the ministry that wouldn't have fit in the doors if it weren't for the generosity of that man and the movement of God through the prayer of the students that were there at that time. And we can see incredible things happen when we have the expectation that God is going to move. And the expectation and the hope, as small as a mustard seed, that God can do something to actually make a difference. One of my favorite passages about prayer, it's a few books later in the New Testament, and it's in Ephesians chapter 3. The Apostle Paul is writing to the Ephesians, and he's talking about how he wants them to know God's love and the power and the width and the height. And he has this beautiful long prayer about how he longs for them to know the fullness of God's love and the fullness of God's power at work within them. And then in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 20, Paul says these words, "Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine." I love that phrase, who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine. I want you to think for a second, what is the most you can think or imagine you could ask God through prayer? What is the wildest dream that you have that you believe that God can do? What Paul tells us here is that God is able to do immeasurably more than all of that. I was a math tutor for 2 years at Young Harris College. I have no idea how to quantify what variable immeasurably more equals out to. I don't know how to measure that. But what I do know is it's a lot. I do know that it's exponentially more than anything I could quantify on my own. And that's what is possible through God for those who believe, for those who take that mustard seed size faith, for those who have that belief that God can do something miraculous. According, as Paul says, according to his power that is at work within us. What does that power look like? It looks like the faith of a mustard seed. Because the reality is that we need to embrace God for more. We need to embrace God for more. And the reality is that it is not about the size of our prayers. It is not about the size of our faith. It is about the size of our God. It is about the size of what he is capable of doing. It is about what he is able to do at work within us and in the world in which we live. God who is able to do more. And for us to truly go deep in prayer, we've got to embrace the more that God has for us. We've got to embrace and believe and to expect that God is able to do immeasurably more. Because when we do, when we come honest with our doubts, honest with our limitations, but believing in faith and believing in hope that God is able to do that, that is when we are able to see miracles truly take place. Another story, I remember hearing Tom Tanner share about the Wesley Foundation. The story just cracks me up. There was another time that there was a group of students who gathered together in the prayer chapel. It's still there at the University of Georgia Wesley Foundation campus, right there facing Lumpkin Street, just down from Stegman Coliseum. And this group gathered together there, and they went and they spent time in prayer. And what they were praying was, Lord, would you give us an opportunity when we go to downtown Athens tonight to share the gospel with someone there? Just would you just give us one person that once we get downtown, after we finish our prayer meeting, that you would give us a chance to speak to one person? We want to tell people about Jesus. Would you open up that door for us? They finished praying. They walk out the door, and as they are walking out of the parking lot, someone walks up to them and says, hey, I've been looking around all night for a campus ministry that might be open. Can you tell me what it means to be saved? And they just sat there dumbfounded that God was almost laughing at their request that they could go on this crusade of downtown, and instead he brought them right to the doorstep. That's what it looks like for God to do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine. That's what it looks like to have just a small mustard seed size faith and to see God do something incredible through it. And so our challenge as we think about this idea of going deeper in prayer is to believe God for more, to believe God for immeasurably more, to believe that it's not about the size of our faith, that when we embrace the smallness of our faith, we can see the big impact that God can make through it. Because it's not about what we bring to the table. It's about the power of God at work within us and the power of God that makes all of it possible. And so if we would come through prayer, recognizing our own smallness, recognizing where we are small in our faith, but believing and trusting in the power and the majesty of God to do immeasurably more than all we could ask or imagine, that's when we start to see miracles take place. At the end of our early service, my wife Emma, I'm going to read it off my watch because I asked her to send it to me. She shared a quote from a friend of hers that says, expectation is the audacity to believe the things you hope for will be. I'll read that again. Expectation is the audacity to believe the things you hope for will be. And the question for us is, what do we expect God to do? What are the more than prayers that we might offer up? What are the things that we would come before God and we would say, God, I believe, help my unbelief. God, I've prayed for this. I've lifted it up. I believe that you are capable of doing it. But right now, God, I am filled with unbelief. What are those things that we would bring before the altar? What are those things that we would bring amongst the community of faith and say, God, if you intervene, is this possible? I cannot muster it in my own strength. I cannot muster it through my own faith. I need you to be at work through your power within me and within the world, and I am coming with the smallest mustard seed of faith that I can bring to the table. What are those things? What would you bring to the Lord today? I've got a few things. One, we've got a preschooler in our church we've been praying for over 6 months now. She's got a big day tomorrow. She's got a brain map, and they believe they have identified what's been causing her seizures since July. And they believe that if they are able to identify it, if it is repairable, that by Tuesday she will be able to have the surgery that she needs to get on a full path of healing. And I have the audacity to believe that God can do something miraculous through that process. And so I hope you'll join me in saying, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. I bring to you the small mustard seed of prayer and ask you to do something incredible. I believe, with the audacity of that every pastor should have, that at least 40 of you are going to sign up to make VBS awesome this year. I believe that through the audacity of expectation that God can do something miraculous through our church. I believe through the audacity of the Holy Spirit at work within us that we can make a difference within this community. I believe in so many things and I expect so many things, but I also know that I'm human and that I have doubts and I have unbelief. So would you join me? Can we lay that before God this morning? Can we just be honest about where we are when it comes to prayer, that we believe, but sometimes we struggle with our unbelief, and we simply just want to come with a small mustard seed today and say, God, you're the one who can do immeasurably more. May it be so.